Tonight, let's read and comment on a writing by Zen Master Poshan. Poshan lived from 1575 to 1630. Chinese master. So he's well beyond the Song Dynasty. And was earlier than Hahuin in Japan. It's just to place him. More than 300 years later than Dogen. That puts him in some kind of time space. What this whole section of many pages is about the doubt sensation, which is one of the great three pillars of Zen. And this is one of the things that is essential in, successfully navigating the way of Zen. And needs to really be known in its intimacy in order that a person can practice appropriately. So this is what Poshan says. When working on Zen, the important thing is to generate the doubt sensation. What is this doubt sensation? For instance, where do I come from before my birth? Where shall I go after my death? Since one does not know the answer to these, to either question, a strong feeling of doubt arises in the mind. So this doubt is not disbelief. This doubt is a nagging wondering, because the answer will not yield to the analytical mind. There's not data on it for that mind to operate with. And yet there's something about it. What? How does this being appear in the world? And is there no residue upon death? That, of course, is only one form of the doubt sensation. But it is used here because it has been very common driving concern for folks. Then Master Dogen was very influenced by the early death of his parent. And so it has been with a number of people in Zen history. This question of death, this question of birth. In general, there are two modes these days for the that people are offered for the for working on this deep question. One of them is really turns towards what is reality, and this is really behind the koan mu. What is this all about anyhow? What is this of the whole of one's experience? What is it? And the other one is the who or what am I question for people that are more focused on the nature of their own being. And what am I? What am I? Here I am, I look inside, I find the five skandhas, traditionally called, so-called in Buddhism, sensations and the commentaries and emotional responses to various sensations and various forms that are generated in the mind, and gradually you get to know that these forms are not a one-to-one correspondence to the external world. They are a movie or a map or a construction in the mind, and so they can't be the answer. And then there are character structures, and they come and go. There are various things, consciousness itself. But what is that? What is mind? What is body? And all these things, if they are pursued to the depths of their being, become an inquiry that leads to a brick wall as far as the the discursive or mind that seeks understanding is concerned. And it is at that point that real Zen practice begins. So this questioning and this exhaustion of all the possible avenues of answer is a very profound part of this path using the doubt sensation. But it is nonetheless a preliminary part of it. It is a part that exhausts the usual way of speaking or discerning or analyzing. And during that time, a person has to be very sincere about wanting to go to the bottom line. What is it? What is it? Whether it be about what is death, what is, where was I before I was born, whence does this me arise, or whatever it is for the person. It doesn't have to be one of those formulated questions. If a person has a doubt, a deep question of their own that has really bugged them, you might say, or plagued them, or kept coming back, then that is a great way to enter. So this doubt sensation is not disbelief. It is not anything but a deep wondering, a deep questioning that is insistent upon going to the bottom line. And learns along the way to not be fooled, to not be attached to any of the responses or answers that would be given by a traditional form of inquiry. And this really is one of those things of which we could speak as the last frontier. You know, people speak of the depths of the ocean as the last frontier, or the outermost reaches of space exploration is the last frontier. The mind, what is mind, or various disorders of being, various pathologies. But this is the fundamental thing about what we are as human beings, that includes how we generate reality and what it is that this is really all about. And the answer is not to be obtained by the analytical mind, but nobody needs to believe that. And in Zen we say there are no beliefs. So therefore things have to be exhausted organically. When they are exhausted organically, when you are really sitting with the depth of the question, you are not distracted by any attachment to a train of thought or to a suggestion that comes in. So it is an organic way of developing a concentration. And it is the most efficacious way of developing this concentration, rather than by thinking one has to push out thoughts or explore what this thing about concentration really is and so on. It's the organic way is this one. So this is all involved in this doubt sensation. So Pushan goes on and says, stick this doubt mass onto your forehead and keep it there all the time, until you can neither drive it away nor put it down, even if you want to. Then suddenly you will discover that the doubt mass has been crushed and that you have broken it into pieces. The masters of old said, the greater the doubt, the greater the awakening. The smaller the doubt, the smaller the awakening. No doubt, no awakening. One might substitute for the word doubt in that famous phrase, deep questioning. The greater the deep questioning, the greater the awakening. So on. So this deep questioning is what is at the essence of it. Not settling for any thing along the way, that's what it is. Finally, I understand. All understanding has to be gone underneath. What do I mean by this? Is this really it? And you put everything into doubt, into deep questioning. And one comes to a place where there is a spaciousness, there is an inquiry without subject. And then it is more like a, if I might say it in this way, a kind of cozying up to the question, cozying up to the unknown. and hanging out there with that deep wondering that is no longer satisfied by any response that can be specified in words or envisioned in a mental construction. What is it? What is it? And yet even that phrase is not repeated in there. There is just the sensation of being in the presence of the unknown, and yet a kind of yearning or demanding, and insisting, you might say, of knowing it. What is it? I will settle for nothing else than the depth of knowing it. And in that sense, every person follows the path of Shakyamuni himself, who sat, as everybody knows, beneath the Bo tree and said to himself, at least that's the way it's reported afterwards, that he would not arise from this seat until he has had all his doubts satisfied. And it's not that he has reached enlightenment. He doesn't put it that way, I believe. But how he puts it is that all his doubts have been dispersed, so that he really knows the bottom line. So that has to be the way for all of us. And it is about that that Bhushan speaks. So he goes on. He says, when working on Zen, the worst thing is to become attached to quietness, because this will unknowingly cause you to be engrossed in dead stillness. Then you will develop an inordinate fondness for quietness, and at the same time an aversion for activity of any kind. Once those who have lived amidst the noise and restlessness of worldly affairs experience the joy of quietness, they become captivated by its honey-sweet taste, craving it like an exhausted traveler who seeks a peaceful den in which to slumber. How can people with such an attitude retain their awareness? Now, on the one hand, awareness is, of course, where it's at, not being fooled and insisting on going on, even though you don't know to what you are going on. On the other hand, I have nothing against people utilizing a form of meditation to experience this depth of quietness. And actually, out of this depth of quietness can come a sense of not being fooled by any entrant into this quiet mind. But what has to be remembered is what Bhushan is warning against, and that is that this, it might be so, like his phrase, such that it is like having a honey-sweet taste, a great relief that it can tend to be that which one utilizes one's meditation practice to achieve. And so I would suggest differentiating between the practice that is fueled by, motivated by, that the motor of it is this deep questioning, and a form of meditative practice whereby one enters into this deep quietness. They are put here as though they are in contrast, but really, for one who has experienced them, there can be a realization that there is a kind of a spectrum. There is a kind of bridge, one from one to the other. So that within this quietness, there can develop a great spaciousness. And this spaciousness can also contain a sense of not being fooled by anything that enters into it. It is a spaciousness that embraces, in a sense, that the sky embraces clouds or embraces birds that fly through it. A sense that one's, what will we call it, mind, state of consciousness, is large enough that nothing can obstruct it. That it is like space in that regard. Now that can come out of this quietness and can be a marvelous place to then undertake this depth of questioning. What is it as I breathe? What is it as I walk? What is it as these thoughts come and go? What is it that when these sensations come and go? What am I? What is it? And in Zen we emphasize that that the response that is sought in this depth of questioning is never an articulated response, but rather a living response. A response that is related to this phrase I used about cozying up to. It's an experiential thing. You cozy up to it. You want to know it in your whole being. And no articulated or understanding response will satisfy you. And then going on like that is to get on the wavelength of fundamental Zen practice. So Poshan goes on. He says, when working on Zen, one does not see the sky when he lifts his head, nor the earth when he lowers it. To that person, a mountain is not a mountain, and water is not water. While walking or sitting, he is not aware of doing so. Though among 100,000 people, he sees no one. Without and within his body and mind, nothing exists but the burden of his doubt sensation. This feeling can be described as, quotes, turning the whole world into a muddy vortex. Now this does not mean that one pushes away the awareness of other people or other things in the world. But one is so concerned with this single-pointed mind, and it is best done when one is sitting on a cushion, as it were, or in a chair or whatever, but when one does not have to do things in the world like driving a car or maneuvering the grocery store or whatever, so that there's total freedom to let everything go and penetrate into this place that is described here by Poshan, where you don't see anything, you don't hear anything, meaning that you don't stop to differentiate, oh, that's a that, or that's a this, and so on. You have long since realized the arbitrariness of all names, that they do not really delineate any thing in the world. In other words, you are approaching that sense that there is only one reality, this single-pointed concentration that Poshan is referring to, where you see nothing means nothing more than that you don't stop to differentiate things in the world. You are in the presence of this one reality, and therefore you do not differentiate walking from sitting. You do not stop and be conscious of building this story, this continuity that is often mistaken by people as who they are. But rather you are cozying up, as it were, to this sense of one reality, and not even utilizing the term one reality, because that too can be construed as in contrast to multiple realities. But there is this thing, and the closer you get to it, it is as though you experience the emanations of it, much as you often have heard me say, like being on a village street and smelling the smell of baking bread, that you know that there is a something there, and the more that you pursue this doubt sensation, and the more that you purify the mind of its tendency to hook onto things that have names, and you can let them all be, knowing that they're quite arbitrary, and that in doing so, you are not losing any skill. You can always pick this skill up later on, but in this space where one is cultivating or pursuing or whatever one word one wants to appropriately use, this depth of questioning, all of those other things are irrelevant. And that's why he says that it's like turning the whole world into a muddy vortex. That is to say, into something wherein there is no particular differentiation about anything. And that is a very fortuitous place. At that place, the least thing can, as we say, break open one's mind. And so he says here, the Zen yogi should resolutely vow that he or she will never stop working until this doubt mass is broken up. This is a most crucial point. Then he says, what does this turning the world into a muddy vortex mean? It refers to the great truth, which from the very no beginning time has existed latent and idle. It has never been brought forth. Therefore, a Zen yogi should bestir himself to make the heavens spin and the earth and its waters roll. He will benefit greatly from the rolling surges and tossing waves. Meaning that this is the opposite of this, what was referred to earlier by Pushan as this dead sitting, this addiction to quietness, that one, in a sense, does not relent in this questioning, this deep wondering into what is it. That is what he means by this having the heavens spin and the earth and its waters roll. There is a great vitality in that space. And yet it is not specifically about any earth or water. It is just the presence of a great aliveness in this profound questioning that may be experienced in one's being as a state of total stillness. Stillness wherein one no longer is in any way interested in one's history or tomorrow or yesterday or any delineations of self from others, that all these things are gone. There is only this, that at that time is represented by, if one's koan is mu, it is represented just by this sound mu. It contains all questioning and all answers. It contains everything. There is only one thing. The question is no longer differentiated from the response, nor the response differentiated from the question. There is no, therefore, yearning for an answer, nor is there any sense of the history of being on some kind of strategic path. All is gone. All is gone. And yet, one persists. And this is turning the world into a muddy vortex, having the heavens spin and the earth and its waters roll. Just merely metaphoric expressions of this great aliveness and the relentlessness of the question, that you insist on staying at that point. Sometimes in Zen it's called climbing a polished silver mountain. But there's no way you think you can, but then it doesn't matter whether you can climb it or not climb it. You don't care about anything. There's just this. And you just put yourself more and more into its depth. Sometimes this is called letting go. Sometimes this is called surrendering. But they're all irrelevant terms. For they all stand in relationship to a history of each word and an interpretation. And therefore they are not useful to point to the actual experience of this that Beauchamp is speaking of. So this state of profound involvement profound. Now, what can one say? Justiceness. As though one were probing into the center of the earth. It's very much what the old alchemists used to. Of course, there weren't many that really practiced the depth of alchemy. But this, in a sense, is an alchemy because it is a transformation, as it were. And as the old alchemist said, in every lead there is gold. Meaning, in every human being there is this untarnished Buddha nature. And their old acronym was vitriol. Veni interiora terra rectiva kandu and veni sukotum lapidem. Go to the center of the earth. Go to the interior of the earth. Veni interiora terra rectiva kandu. By purification. In veni sukotum lapidem. Find or discover the hidden stone. Now the stone represents something that is totally solid, totally trustworthy, totally beyond which nothing, essence of our life and being. And that is exactly what this Zen training accomplishes for an individual. And that the essence of this emphasis or this path of the doubt sensation is like going deep into this place where everything is unknown, and yet you know that it is the right place. It is the place where this dwells, and yet you don't know what it is. But you are willing to let everything dissolve away in order that you realize it. Those words are only approximate, but they are the kind of thing that point to kind of activity that is needed in this for the depth of awakening. There are many kinds of shallow awakening, but for the depth of awakening, which then allows you to do many things. And undergo the further refinement of the whole koan system in Zen. And live with a different kind of insight, different kind of freedom. It is depicted often in Zen as the pearl or the jewel that has to be wrested from the dragon in a cave at the bottom of the ocean. All of those images represent the kind of persistence. And that is why the second of the great three pillars is persistence and determination. And of course they have to be underlain by the third of the great three pillars, which is trust. That there is something there. There is a realizable reality that can become one's own or can be recognized as one's own being, the gold that is in what previously might have been called the lead of one's being. Well, let's end there tonight and continue with this section, with this teaching on the doubt sensation of Master Pushan at another time.